It's the power of going left foot, right foot. The power of going forward. Forward is a pace. And as long as you continue, as long as you don't give up, you will get somewhere. There's always a point in your life where you look back and you go, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. I didn't know that the couch potato, Harry Potter loving, daytime television renovation TV show run 80 kilometers. I genuinely didn't know that. And if she can run 80 kilometers, what else can she do? It gave me an avenue to being proud of myself in a way that I'd never had been before. And I think that that was something I realized that I couldn't buy. You can't go to the corner store and buy personal pride. I'm running on behalf of the people who can't be here today. And it changes everything. It changes your mindset. It changes your physicality. Mm. It changes the day. All the reasons I run have got nothing to do with running. So if you can't see the progress in your running, have a look at the progress in your life. You will always find it.
Okay, you said make it snappy snap, and I just realized I've just hit recording and we haven't even said a word to each other apart from let's make it snappy snap. So here we are. We are going off the cuff, as they say in the industry. No planning is the best planning. How are you, Lids?
I'm great. I didn't realize that we ever have a plan for our intro, so.
Well, I feel like we at least get our Strava up and we at least, have a brief moment of conversation, but we're just doing it.
Well, let's just have it on the podcast, you know. I mean, I feel like our life is on the podcast anyway, right?
I know. I think the more that we meet people who we don't know and who only know us from the podcast, the more it makes me realize how much we've shared, because people know probably more than they need to know about our lives, but it's kind of nice. But also I feel like we should know equal amounts about other people's lives. So I always feel a bit like, oh, tell me your whole life story in the next 2 minutes, because you already know mine. But I guess it saves us having to explain ourselves, you know?
Yes. Well, that's true. I feel like, it is like a good, if I know someone's been listening, I know they're up to date on the main events happening in their life. So that's always good. Also, on that point, guys, you're welcome to just slide to the DMs and tell us what you're up to. And tell us about your running. Tell us about
your injuries. Send us an audio message.
Keep us updated. Anyway, Sophie Lang, tell me, how's your running going? How's the body? What's going well? What's not going well? I know there's a lot happening at the moment.
I feel like I should kick it off with talking about the run that happened on Saturday from Giles Penfold, friend of the show, who we had on the podcast a while ago. And he was attempting and, in fact, completely obliterated the record for the fastest known time from Bondi to Manly back to Bondi, which is like 160 Ks. And I don't know the elevation, but it would be heaps, lots of stairs, sand, lots of annoying turns, little hills, just a lot of kilometers, really. And we were lucky enough to do a couple of Ks with him, which was so much fun. And I feel like there's just something really nice about playing a very, very, very small part in someone's big adventure and just getting to witness them do it. And especially someone like Giles, who was just so cool, calm, collected. He was just doing his thing, not complaining, just getting on with it. And it was really inspiring to see. And I'm feeling like the ultra bug in me is coming back.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was so great, wasn't it? And he's so humble and just so almost like unbothered by the whole thing. Like, he just seemed so calm and casual. And I guess maybe because calm is like not my strong word, it just seemed so. I just remember when I first joined up and I was like, oh my gosh, hey, like, how are you going?
Yeah, that was your energy did not match the prior energy. Like, whoa, okay, she's arrived. She has arrived.
I was so excited. I was just like, oh my gosh, I've just caught a ferry to get here. And like, I just had to run for it and I made it on time. And I ran over the bridge and the sun is shining, and the blue sky's out, and you just run 120 Ks and here we are all together. And he was just so relaxed. I was like, wow, like just, oh yeah, feeling good. Yeah, no worries. Like, yeah, training went well and just cruising along. I was like, gosh, like I kind of would expect, I feel like most people get a bit loopy in the head by a couple of hours in, and he'd been running since midnight. So incredible. I mean, I get a bit loopy even just like you know, I was going to say a few hours in, but probably no, like 20 minutes in, I feel like, you know, conversations start getting a bit wild. But yeah, I was so impressed, inspired, and similar to you. So if I feel like being a part of it, I was like, oh, I want to do something cool. And also just generally, I want to do Bondi to Manly. I don't know if I'm going to do the event, but I want to run it at some point. Like, it's definitely officially on my brain, whatever. Wow. That, you know?
We've come full circle because
I know.
I still remember the conversation we had when I was like, hey, I'm going to do this thing. And you're like, what? Why would you want to do that? That's so silly. And here we are. Probably exactly a year ago you were saying those things, so I'm glad that you've come around to it. And I'm glad you're appreciating it, because it is just a really cool thing to do. And the fact that he did it one way and then turned around and went all the way back is just mind-blowing. So that was really cool to be a part of. So thank you, Giles, for letting us tag along. And then other stuff that's been happening, we went and cheered. I feel like I've got so many moments of that morning where it was just me by myself for the first little while. And I had so much fun. I absolutely loved cheering, and I loved cheering with you and our new friend Kyle from Hoka. Yeah. So much fun. So shout out to everyone who did the Hoka Runaway Half or 10. We hopefully made a great impression and gave you a little smile on the way. I had quite a few messages of people like, oh my God, I can't believe you were out there just like yelling random stuff, and it made me laugh. And, you know, I feel like it's just nice to be a part of people's journeys, even just for a brief moment or two. So that was fun. I was meant to be racing the half, so shout out to Jordan, who voluntarily took my ticket off my hands and ran a really great time. And if you look on the results, someone actually messaged me saying, oh my God, you ran such a quick half, because it was like an hour 28, and I was like, yeah, not quite. But I could claim it, I could pretend. So the updates on that are, my hamstring felt not great after Giles's run on Saturday, which was to be expected. I had planned to just do 5 or 10 Ks and ended up doing 25 because, you know, the vibes were just good. And
you're a sucker for the good vibes, aren't
good
you?
Good vibes, they ruined me. But it was just so nice. I just didn't want to stop.
I wasn't good either at persuading you against, because I was neutral. I stayed neutral. I didn't discourage. I didn't encourage. I was just like, okay, I didn't really say much, because I also just wanted you to be there and just like keep running. But I also like, yeah, I mean, you encouraged me to run less, which was good for me, but I encouraged you probably to run more. I mean, look, I think I was pretty neutral, but anyway, I'm sorry. I should have told you to run shorter.
No, I know. I'm glad. And it feels okay today. So we're like, few days later, did 8Ks this morning on a little bit of downhill and flat, and it was pretty good. I didn't feel it at all until about 6 or 7Ks in, and then it just started to rear its head. Is that a phrase? Rear its head.
I think like a pimple or something.
Oh no, it's like when you poke out of the bushes. You like arrive. That was like my hamstring, ooh, I'm here.
Hello.
So yeah, then I just wrapped it up at 8Ks, and yeah, it's felt good since then. So it's still a thing, it still exists, but it's not detrimental, is how I'm putting it. All of this is completely unguided and my own imagination. So, Lydia, can I book in soon?
Yeah, you can. Thanks. Yes, you definitely can. Can you please book in soon? /, can you visit me soon, please?
I'd love to.
You're invited.
Thank you.
Yeah, we need to sort your hamstring out. We need to figure it out. We need to do some testing. Mm-hmm. We need to get you under my hands.
Yeah, I want to get some Mobes. I want to get some manual therapy. I want those magic hands to heal me in one session, because that's how it works, isn't it?
That's how it works. Well, yeah, I would like to do some work on your toes. When we're in Melbourne,
big toe is the secret.
For context for our listeners, we did some great work on your feet, didn't we?
All those tram rides were very productive.
Anyway, we need to do some more of that. So either another trip to Melbourne with more tram rides, have our feet up on the seat and I can do some handiwork, or you just come and visit me. / hopefully we see each other before you come in to see me at work. I'm glad you're feeling a little bit better. And I also want to say, have you got an action plan beyond seeing me in terms of what your week is going to look like? Like, what are you going to do the rest of the week? Are you going to run flat and short? Is that the plan, and slow?
Yeah, flat, short, slow, short steps.
That's my way of saying, can you please run flat, slow, and short?
Yeah, no, I'm on board with that. I'm so on board. I'm thinking more frequency, less duration in one session.
Yeah, I think that's a really good approach. I like that.
Because it feels good for a little while. So I feel like I can maximize the time while it's feeling good. I'm doing like 3 heavy gym sessions, and then in between that, some hamstring bridges and holds, some hammy sliders, the usual calf work regularly, that kind of jazz most days. And then, yeah, I feel like they're the main things.
That sounds all pretty good.
Thanks. I did try.
Well done.
I do know a little thing or two.
A few things.
A couple things. Tell me about you.
I feel a bit more like me again. I was thinking this morning when I was at the gym, it's so amazing how, you know, I feel like, again, talking about my hamstring, my injuries and all these things, I'm a bit of a broken record, but it's amazing how no matter how many injuries I've had, they still are testing and the whole like physical and mental thing. And I think now that I really feel like I'm getting to that end stage with my hamstring, I'm just so much more feeling like me again. And it's amazing because I really felt like this injury was so benign and so, you know, not impactful at all. Like the week I injured it, I still ran 70Ks that week. And I was like, oh, it's really just not going to be that big of an injury. Like, yes, it might take like 12 weeks for that really sort of end stage healing, like, you know, heel sprints and sprinting and all that stuff, but I'm still going to jog around and do most of my stuff. But I think it's definitely just impacted me. Yeah, I mean, it's been a huge impact. And I think having a proximal hammy injury is difficult because it affects you like day to day. Like you can't sit for that long and it's annoying in the car, getting in and out of the car. Like there's so many things in your just day-to-day life that you have to adjust. And it's been really annoying and frustrating and just like, yeah, I'm amazed and surprised at, again, another injury after all the years of having injuries, that it still is so frustrating and like shit and kind of like, wouldn't you just eventually just be so okay with having injuries and be like, oh, it's just another one. Oh, well, cool. And overall, I would say it's been the least impactful of any injury I've had in terms of mentally. Like I've just been like, oh yeah, cool. Like just keep doing all my things and doing other stuff and just like enjoying the process of rehabbing injuries. Like I genuinely actually get interested and excited by that. Like the opportunity to read more about proximal hamstring anatomy and rehab and exercises to load that area. And I've enjoyed that learning. And I know that I'm going to come back stronger and all those good things. But I think now that I'm in that end stage, it's like I can look back and be like, oh, you know what? That actually did suck probably a little bit more than I said it did at the time. And I'm glad to be feeling a bit more like me again.
Yeah, I'm so glad for you. I feel like I don't know if an injury would ever – I don't know if the – what's the word? The effect would lessen with the amount that you've had. Like you're saying, you know, you've had lots of injuries before, so you wouldn't expect it to have such an effect on just your general life and I guess mental state and all those other things. But I don't know if it would – I don't know. It'd be an interesting survey to put out there to people if over time as they get more and more injuries, does it just become – less of a thing because they're just so used to it by then. I would imagine it would almost become more annoying because you're like, oh, surely this shouldn't happen again. Surely I've had all the injuries. I don't know. So I wouldn't expect it to get better in that sense personally. So interesting that you thought that and annoying that it didn't go like that. But glad to hear that you're coming out of the other side.
Yeah. Gosh, I'm going to unpack this. I feel like it's just different every person, isn't it? It's probably just not that black and white. I think overall, I like to think that when you have setbacks, they build resilience rather than just make you get more frustrated. So I think overall, I'm more resilient mentally when I do have setbacks. Yet, I guess I just want to be even more resilient and even more robust. Mm. And I guess that's just, I think it's a good thing. It's like wanting to be even better at coping with adversity or like, you know, or even on the minor scale. And I just want to keep flexing that muscle. Yet sometimes it's hard to do it. And I guess just observing all of that and yeah, that's good. It's good. I think where it's at the moment is actually feeling good. I just did a little midweek mod run, as I like to call it, or a midweek moddy.
What's a moddy? Moderate?
Yeah, like not a long run, but a mod run.
Oh, so it's describing the duration, not the intensity.
Oh yeah, no, definitely not. But what I should say is I ran a little bit faster than normal, like sub 5 minute pace.
Like Moddy pace.
Almost Moddy pace. Well, I mean, comfy pace still, but I definitely, like, at the very end, I was like, oh, I feel like there's a little awareness of the hammy again. And I would say overall, the last 2 weeks, the hamstring has been very quiet, like so quiet. And I'm just like so excited. Like I'm pushing it a bit more in the gym every day, getting stronger, all those good things. And it's felt the best it's ever felt, like sitting, like I've had no pain sitting, which has been so nice. But there's just been a few little like, oh, there it is. And just at the end, like the last K, I was like, oh, like teeny tiny bit of like tightness, but I'm sitting down right now and like I can feel nothing, which is so nice because previously if I'd pushed it a little bit and then I'd sit down, I'd just be in so much pain. So good overall progress, but I guess we'll find out tomorrow exactly what the outcome is of the midweek Moddy.
What was the distance on the Moddy, can I ask?
Like 18, I think, or 19.
Oh,
so Moddy.
Well, long, right? What makes it long? I feel like more than an hour and a half is long in my head.
Oh, I think it was 129.
Oh, she's quick.
128. Nah, I have no idea. Can't remember. Okay. Well, quick, I ran 33Ks the other week on a Wednesday. So I feel like
that was wild.
I like to keep things spicy, as they say.
You do. Yeah. Also, yes. I'm excited for us to run together. That was really fun the other day.
Oh.
I feel like we hadn't done that in a while.
Us running together.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Let's try and put it in the diary a bit more. I do recall reaching out to you a while ago being like, we should organize a 6-weekly dinner. And you were like, maybe. And then we just.
I'm happy to do a dinner.
Yeah.
But I just don't know which night we're going to be able to fit a dinner in. I feel like we're available on a Sunday morning than midweek night time.
No, but we're struggling to fit in runs or anything. I was just trying to throw it out. I'm like, hopefully I see you at some point in the next 6 weeks.
Aww.
But I reckon we've done pretty well. I feel like we've averaged like once a fortnight since I moved to Sydney.
Yeah, it's not enough. Really not enough. Yeah. I want daily or nothing. Anyway, what I would like to announce is everybody, yes. Global Running Day is the 7th of June. Which is really soon. Oh, that rhymed.
7th of June, really soon.
Come for a run, have some fun. All right. you know how we talked about not being planned? That wasn't planned either.
DJ Sophie Lane.
Everyone, come to Chatswood. It's in the morning. I thought it was the evening, but it's the morning, 6:30 a.m. So I don't know if you're going to be able to come, but everyone else, come and join. Chatswood, Lululemon store, 5K social run. Hang out after and celebrate running because it's the best day of the year, Global Running Day. It's like the runner's Christmas.
It is. Yes. And I was going to check that with you. Because today I was reminded and told about the Global Running Day and they said it was the morning. I was like, wow, am I going to be doing Global Running Day in the morning and in the afternoon? So
be late? Well, that would be nice. We could do our own in the afternoon. Because last year it was in the evening, so I just assumed.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm going to do Bondi Junction is what I'm going to be doing.
Whoa.
Yes. So if anyone wants to see me in Bondi
Junction. Head to head.
Because this is the thing. I have patients booked in.
The east.
I have patients booked in at 7:30, so I won't make it if I go to Chatswood.
Wow.
I'm actually going to try and move my patient. So if you're my patient at 7:30, just wait for your email.
Come to Chatswood and have your rehab done in store.
Wow. I will normally have patients earlier, but I have changed it.
Also, this is why we only see each other once a fortnight, because you prioritize your patients over me. It's really rude. Well,
you know, just as hard as you have to just be my patient and then you'll get.
Well, I am, because book me in. You cancelled me, so.
I know.
I'm trying. I want to be your friend and I'm struggling with that. So I've got to become a patient. You cancelled me. So what am I left to do? Podcast host is my last
school. Oh, this is sad. Look, Global Run Day, guys, 7th, don't miss out on it, whether you are in the east or the north.
Don't go to the east.
But please go to Chatswood with Sophie Lane because she's hosting the run. She is the run host. Hostess with the mostess.
That's it. Goodness me. All right. Today's episode, shall we get to it? Because this is like so good. Lydia, I don't know if I've told you, but I edited the episode today. Oh. It's all completed, ready to go apart from this intro. And I love it even more than I thought. And I loved it a lot. But there's just so many nice little quotes and moments and Andrea's philosophy. I haven't even introduced it yet, but this is such a good one. So please listen if you haven't, if you're thinking about dropping off, don't drop off.
Yeah, if you just stay for the intro.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's going to go up from here. Surely no one just listens to the intro. Skip that, no. Guys. Yeah, anyway. Liz, you want to introduce our lovely guest?
Yes, so we had the Slow Coach on for our podcast today. So the Slow Coach, otherwise known as Andrea, and she is someone who aims to coach people who are middle and back of the pack runners, and someone who would describe herself as not naturally sporty or athletic herself, but someone who really has a passion for creating a safe, inclusive, and welcoming space for runners of every single ability, every single age, different fitness levels, people with different goals, different aspirations, and just all about making it an enjoyable and sustainable experience. And we absolutely love the podcast. Like, I second everything that you said, Soph. It was just an absolute pleasure to have Andrea on the show because her philosophy just, I think I smiled the whole episode. Like, I really genuinely just loved everything Andrea had to say. Like, the way she approaches setting goals and the way she just every single thing, the way she treats her runners, the people in her club, it's just this whole community, and it's so beautiful. And I think it's really creating this sustainable relationship with sport and exercise and allowing people to enjoy it, which is just what it's all about, right?
Yeah, this is it. This is what we should all be taking on board. Even if you feel like you're someone who's quite competitive, if you're training for races, if you're trying to get PBs, focusing on the numbers, that stuff's all good and well, but I think we can all take something out of this episode, regardless of your pace. It's not about that. It's about enjoying it, as Lydia just said. So we spoke about some advice for those who are wanting to get started, but maybe don't feel comfortable and they're not sure how to get into it. We talked about the assumption that a good athlete automatically makes a good coach. We talked about the running community and whether or not it's welcoming to runners of all paces, how we can be more inclusive to people of all abilities, and some other little secret things that you're going to have to stay tuned for.
I think for me, this episode was really about mindset and sustainability and how we sort of approach sport and athleticism and goal setting. And I think, I know we didn't sort of specifically delve into like what is goal setting, blah, 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 but I think just in general, I think typically running has this association of being all in and all out, and it's like you're always trying to get better and faster and run further and do all these hectic wild things, and I think often that's quite intimidating. And I think it's such a shame because running should just be something that's enjoyable, and if it's not enjoyable, it's not sustainable. And movement is so important to being a human. Like, we're designed to move, and it's such a shame that running is often too intimidating for people to get into or stick with. And I think that that can change with people like Andrea. And I think she's really just like paving the way in sort of a space that just hasn't really previously had much attention. So I'm just really excited about what she's doing. And even if you are someone who considers yourself really competitive and you're wanting to push the boundaries, you know, reach these high sort of objective markers or whatever it is, I think there's still a lot you can take out of this from just the mindset perspective and the philosophy of enjoyment and sustainability and inclusivity, and also even maybe just give you a little bit of an insight into what it might feel like to be on the other side, you know, how you can welcome people into your running club that are new and maybe a bit nervous to start running and just make it a happier, more enjoyable space for everyone.
Yeah, I love it. Couldn't have said it better myself. Now you can reach Andrea on Instagram. She's at The Slow Coach. We'll have that linked below. She's also got a website with some free resources, some programs, some in-person coaching as well. So please, if any of her message today resonates with you, then please reach out to her, even just a quick message to say that you enjoyed the episode. I'm sure she would appreciate. If you need any nutrition for your endurance endeavors, we've got our discount code for Tailwind to save you a little bit of cash and get you some good nutrition and hydration. And also our code for Barefoot is below as well. Thank you so much for tuning in once again, or if it's your first episode, welcome. And we will speak to you next week.
Amazing. Thanks, guys. Enjoy the show.
Welcome back to the Stronger Stride podcast. Today we are here with someone who is known as the Slow Coach within the industry. Her name is Andrea, and she's here to talk to us all about the benefits of running slow and taking away the need to feel like you need to go fast and the need to hit a certain pace and a PB and all the stress that comes with running, and just enjoy it for what it is. So Andrea, how are you doing? Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Sophie. Hi, Lydia. Thanks so much for having me.
No problem. If you want to kick us off with a little bit of background on yourself, how you got into running, how you got into coaching, and where you're at with all that at the moment.
Yeah, I think probably needs to start with the fact that I've never been a runner. I've never been an athlete. I've never been active. You know, I've been one of those people who spent most of my life reading a book, sitting on a couch, watching daytime television, those kinds of things. I'm the dorky academic, red-faced, frizzy-haired, awkward, you know, into musical theatre and all kinds of cool things like that. So to find myself speaking to you as a runner and as a running coach is quite a surprise, especially to me. But yeah, it's been a bit of a story. So look, never been a runner and never really thought of myself as a runer, but probably around 10 or 12 years ago, I went through some stuff like many people do. I had two girlfriends in fairly quick succession pass away through two different forms of cancer. And my husband was also diagnosed with cancer, but he is fortunately completely fine now. But I think those things combined with some other stuff, we, as a result of my husband's cancer, you know, we went through a fair bit of trauma. We had a really tough time with his recovery. And then also we hadn't completed our family. So there was a lot of IVF involved in getting and staying pregnant. And we nearly lost our baby through a premature birth, and we immigrated, and there was we moved from Sydney to Perth, and there was some financial pressure. So it was a bit of a trauma soup. But the sort of three highlights, that's a terrible word, lowlights of that chapter were these sort of three people in my life who were going through this really complex pathway of disease. And it just gave me a really big wake-up call that I was essentially sitting on the couch and shoveling Doritos and taking for granted the one thing that they really, really wanted. I had a healthy body and they didn't, and I was wasting mine. And so for whatever reason, that prompted me to go for a run. I just thought, well, I've got this moment in time. I've got a healthy body. Why don't I give my future self the memory of looking back on this chapter and go, at least when I was healthy, I marked it. I used my body and, you know, I can have something to look back on to say that I didn't waste what I had on their behalf. My husband has always been a runner. He's a fantastic, talented runner. He's done three Comrades marathons, amongst other things. So he was a great source of information when I was starting out. I downloaded the 12-week Couch to 5K app, and I think it took me 24 weeks to complete, just primarily because of my sheer lack of talent and fitness. I had to do every week twice.
Just making sure you really did it properly.
Yeah. I got to that 5K, you know, eventually, nice. Gasping. And yeah, I guess that's kind of where it started. And through that, I discovered the massive benefits. I discovered the way that it untangled the knots in my head. I discovered the impact that it had on my physical health. I discovered how it connected me to friends and to sunrises and to moments in time. And then completing those sort of first milestones, first 5K, first 10K, first half marathon, and so on, it gave me an avenue to being proud of myself in a way that I'd never had been before. And I think that that was something I realized that I couldn't buy. You can't go to the corner store and buy personal pride. But somehow having achieved it through running, especially having achieved it through a body that's never designed to run, really, it made me proud of myself. And I think that's big. And yeah, so I kept going.
Wow, that's so cool. I think the thought of you can't buy pride, I think it puts things into perspective, because I think Lydia and I have run forever, and Lydia's had her own injury issues. I've had injuries in the past as well, but I think it's easy for us to take it for granted when we are injury free and feeling good and just running all the time, because it just becomes part of life. But if you can kind of step back from that and appreciate it in that idea, I think it's makes it really powerful and makes it feel, you know, we should be really grateful to be able to do it. As you say, we've got a body that can run, so we should appreciate that. So I think that's a really nice message and a really great place to start. So thank you for sharing all of that.
Yeah, thank you. I think as the saying goes, you know, I run because I can. Mm-hmm. And I run on behalf of the people in my life that can't. And it's informed every single run. Honestly, every single run I've ever been on. And you start with that, you know, I always get to the finish line. I always get to the start line looking the way I do, feeling the way I do, feeling sheepish, feeling scared. And then I can run that script. Why am I here? And then I'm running, you know, I'm running on behalf of the people who can't be here today. And it changes everything. It changes your mindset. It changes your physicality. Mm. It changes the day. So it's been pretty awesome.
Wow. Andrea, I just love that. I love that so much. I think, I mean, I always hope that anyone who has any injury or time off running can sort of like come to a similar purpose or belief system. And obviously, you know, we're all different and we can't have the same perspective exactly as you, obviously. But just that purpose and drive, which is so strong. And like, you know, if you can, you must kind of thing. And I've always sort of thought, you know, the human body is designed to move. And every time I have injuries and have time off, you know, I find it challenging, and it also really deepens my gratitude for the human body and its resilience and the way it recovers and adapts. And then I also, you know, look at other people who, you know, for me, when I've had my time off, and like, you know, the reality is it's never been that dramatic, but comparing to other people and thinking, oh my goodness, like I really am so privileged. So it's just, I guess, so amazing to hear how you bring that into every single run. And like you said, it's been every run that you do. Like, I think that's just absolutely incredible. What I'm really curious about is, where did you sort of switch to your mindset from I'm not a runner to I am a runner? And then I guess on that, does it actually matter if you are a runner or not? I always wonder about this identity of like what it means to be a runner. Has that switched for you, and do you think it matters?
Oh, look, great question. That thing about am I a runner, I really do still struggle with it. I don't feel like a runner. I don't necessarily even like running very much. I run because I like who I am after the run. So running has changed every aspect of my life. It's given me confidence. It's given me pride. It's given me better mental health. It's given me better physical health. It's made me a better mum, a better wife, a better friend, a better employee, a better boss. I've set up a business as a result of it. I couldn't possibly have had this conversation with you 10 years ago because I wouldn't have been confident enough to do it. So it's utterly transformed me on every level. So I guess because of that, I would have to sheepishly say, yes, I am. And I would also have advice, because I tell my clients all the time, you know, if you run, if you go for a run, then you're a runner. If you show up, you're faster than everybody who stayed home on the couch.
Mm.
So we all, I think, struggle with some level of this imposter syndrome. It is a tough one to overcome. It's a work in progress. But yes, I will sheepishly say to you today, I am a runner.
Heard it here first. It's official.
Yeah.
It is an interesting one. I think so many people struggle with it. I mean, if we look at it as just the broad context of life, it doesn't really matter whether you call yourself one or not. But I think it is interesting because a lot of us have this idea in our head of what a runner is. And once I'm this fast, I'll be a runner. Once I run this many Ks, I'll be. And then like once I hit this milestone, I think it's this thing that you can never actually reach because it doesn't actually exist. There's no actual baseline. So it's one of those things that you'd constantly be chasing and maybe never feel satisfied. So if you can just say, as you said, if you run, you're a runner, and just get on with it from there. I'd love to hear how you kind of transitioned then into the coaching journey, and when maybe the idea sort of popped into your head that you might like to help other people with their own running, and how you've kind of progressed into the business that you have today.
Yeah. I started running in my very early 40s, and I think that I was about to turn 50, and I was on a run with a bunch of wonderful friends, other runners, but inevitably, as happens on every run, I got left behind. So I was running at the back, which weirdly I'm totally fine with. I quite enjoy it, but I had lost sight of all the other runners, and it just, I found myself in my head once again, and the question just popped up, which was, where are the other runners like me? You know, there's got to be more than just me who loves what the running is doing for my life, the time on my feet, the time alone, the time to think. And the fact that the reason I was running had nothing to do with metrics. I wasn't necessarily interested in getting faster, despite a decade of consistency and strength training and work and sessions. I haven't got any faster. But that doesn't matter. And I just found myself wondering, are there other people like me who run for lots of reasons that have got nothing to do with running? Are there other people like me who are maybe bigger or injured or coming back from running after a break or after having a baby? And the name, the Slow Coach, just popped into my head, a community for slower, older, bigger, injured runners and those returning, you know, after a baby or after a break. And once again, I did some time in my head thinking, can I do that? Can I call myself a coach if I look the way I do and run the way I do and all those things? But then I figured, if not me, then who? So, yeah, I signed up for the level one coaching through Athletics Australia, and that led to level two and subsequently level three, which is where I met you, Soph. And over a period of time, the community has grown around me. I coach in person a couple of times a week. I coach groups and I coach one-on-one. But I've also increasingly been coaching predominantly ladies, a few brave men, who are prepared to work with someone who calls themselves the Slow Coach. But yes, so the community is forming, and I'm realizing that there are, in fact, a lot of runners who, like me, just don't necessarily find, I guess what I'm trying to say is that a lot of the information out there, a lot of the mainstream running conversation is around metrics and performance. And the premise, the underlying premise around a lot of the coaching is the assumption that the runner that you're working with wants to get faster or stronger or thinner or go for longer or more powerful or whatever the case is. And that's fine. Honestly, I'm not trying to take anything away from that. But I'm interested in the metrics around getting happier and getting prouder and gaining confidence and making friends and, you know, scoping out the good coffee shops and things like that. And as that grows, as the sport of running grows, and look, it's booming, so are the number of runners who make up the middle and the back of the pack. And I feel like there's still a little bit lacking in terms of the rigor around that knowledge. Where is the information for runners who will spend longer on their feet, who can't do a marathon in 3 hours but might take six? If they're carrying, you know, a bigger load or coming back from a chronic injury or something like that, we need as much science and as much rigor around them as we are around, you know, coaching the Kenyans at the front of the pack. But more than that, we need a lot of insight around empathy and mindset and encouragement and creating a community where people feel connected and valid. And through that, we can coach the best out of them. So that's what I'm trying to do.
Oh, it's just wonderful, Andrea. I love this so much. I think, I mean, I can think of so many people who, even just in the last week, like multiple people who have said to me, oh, I'd love to come for a run with you, but let me get fitter. Oh, I'd love to start a running group. Oh, I'd love to join us. I'd love to do this. Oh, but I'm just not a runner. I'm not fast enough. I won't keep up. I'm too slow, not unfit, and blah, blah, blah. All like everything that you're speaking to, there's so many people who would get so much benefit after, like, by being coached by myself. And I think that inclusivity part is so important because, as you said, and this is something that I haven't thought about, like, that much with regard to having a coach, which is catering for, you know, the middle and the back of the pack, because you're right. Typically coaching is about performance, getting faster, fitter, all those good things, which is awesome and wonderful. And then the opposite side of that is the social clubs. And then what about, like, as you said, there's this gap of, well, what about people who need a little bit more support or a little bit more help, yet there's not really a space there for them? So, I mean, and that's what you're creating, which I just think is so wonderful. And I just, yeah, I'm really excited by this. I think it's just absolutely fantastic. How do you encourage people to run with you? I think obviously your name, the Slow Coach, is something that would probably get a lot of people quite curious, and I think is quite not, like, it's not very intimidating, right? Like, surely for most people, like, oh, okay, this is interesting. Does that mean that I'm suitable? What sort of barriers do you have sort of getting people to realize that they can run with you? Or do you find that it's the opposite side? People are like, oh, slow. Like, that means it's just like walking or not, I don't know, not pushing myself. But how does that work with sort of getting people on board and joining your run coaching?
Yeah. Thanks. Look, I think you've probably already touched on it, that the name, the Slow Coach, pretty much sums up what I am and what I do. You're 100% accurate in saying that the biggest worry that almost all runners have, regardless of their ability, is whether or not they will be the slowest member when they sign up. They're worried, and my clients in particular are worried about being slow, being awkward, you know, being left behind, not feeling included. And I try and overcome that from the outset. All my messaging, all my social media is very much my authentic view of running, about how I came to it, how I am still slow, but that has never impeded any aspect of my love of the sport. And that being slow can actually be an asset. Slow can actually be a superpower. So if you don't have the ability to go out fast, you can't go out fast and you can't burn out in a race. Being slow usually means you have a longer lifespan. Maybe you have a longer battery life as a runner. It protects you against injury. It creates endurance and, you know, the slow sort of burning of energy and all the things that we need as runners. So I really try to celebrate that being slow can actually be an asset. And that no matter what speed you run at, that there's a place for you in the running community. And the absolute beginners in my groups are always welcomed, no matter what they can do. You know, the average beginner session will usually involve perhaps 1 minute walk followed by 1 minute run. And if somebody can't run for a minute, that's fine. We'll run for 30 seconds or we'll run for 15 seconds and then we'll walk. And then we'll run a little bit more and then we'll walk. And then we just, over time, we measure the improvements. If the runs get a little bit longer, that's great. Sometimes they don't, but that's also fine. Everybody has, you know, a part in the community and everybody's got a reason for being there. Usually it's to do with weight loss or overcoming an injury, but sometimes it's to do with something like making their kids proud or joining in with a friend or wanting to complete the local charity 5K. And those are the sort of outcomes we really focus on. And when the clients achieve them, we really celebrate that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Do you find that, you know, going to these events, if you know, your athletes are signing up to a fun run or doing a park run, things like that, do you find that the general, I guess, broader community is welcoming? I know that you've mentioned that we need more research around this area. We need more, I guess, encouragement and support. But do you find that in general, you know, the event organizers, the volunteers, the way that the event's set up, do you think it allows for people in this sort of situation to feel welcome and included in those events?
Unhesitatingly, I think that the running community is amazingly welcoming and inclusive. But the problem is that when you're on the outside looking in, it doesn't feel that way. So it's very hard to know how welcome you will be when, you know, you stand outside the group or outside your first park run and you look in and you see thin, pretty, perfect ponytails wearing t-shirts from expensive overseas races. And they've got a kind of shorthand. They talk in metrics and they use acronyms. Like, what even is a negative split? So hard to overcome that stuff until you actually find the courage to go for those first few runs. After that, it breaks down pretty quickly. Most runners do remember a time when they couldn't run or when they felt that way. And they are awesome in terms of cheering for other runners, waiting at the finish line, high-fiving, you know, sharing in the celebration. So running is incredibly inclusive, but the courage is always in, you know, finding your way in, taking the first step, going for the first run.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that first time, I mean, for most things is always quite challenging, but I think, you know, you see a lot of, I guess, posts on social media about different groups and they always preach and advertise that they're inclusive and welcoming. So it seems really appealing. But if it is completely your first time, you don't know anyone else there, it is quite scary. And do you have any advice for anyone who has kind of been on the fence, maybe looking at a few groups, trying to scope out if they're going to be able to work up the courage to get there? Have you got any kind of tips to actually getting to that first run?
Tough one. I think you could always reach out beforehand through the group's social media channels, or maybe try and track down their organizer and send them a little email or a note to say you wanted to join in and you know, what can they expect. Mm-hmm. That way, when you do arrive on your first session, hopefully there's somebody there to greet you. There's somebody there to introduce you. Also being just maybe a little bit accountable beforehand will force you to be a little bit braver. Like if you know if somebody's waiting for you, you'll actually show up. The flip side is also true, though. I would say if you are a running coach, or if you are organizing a race or a social run, and you do put something in your copy that says, you know, all pace is welcome, then I would really encourage the organizers of those groups to make sure that all paces are actually welcome, so that somebody who arrives, you know, is not necessarily left behind straight away. The group doesn't just take off like the wind. If you offer a social run and say there'll be a 5K and a 10K option, then make sure that everybody doesn't run the 10, that somebody hangs around to run the 5, you know, in case there's anybody there who wants to do it. If you say something like, join us for breakfast afterwards, make sure that the slower runners have come back before you leave for the restaurant and that they are included. So it's really important that you mean what you say and you say what you mean. I think it's completely fine for running groups to have a competitive focus. But if that's who you are, say that's who you are and be competitive. Whereas if you are an inclusive social community, then make sure that when somebody new arrives that you are inclusive and completely able to incorporate their levels of ability, so that they don't feel totally, you know, totally overwhelmed and overcome and never want to come back again.
It's so important, isn't it? Because I think, like Sophie said at the start, it's probably harder for us to completely relate, like despite the fact that I definitely don't consider myself fast. Like I think I'm just as much that slow person as well, yet I also am quite comfortable and confident to go up to a running group. Like, but that's just me. I've been involved in running for so long, so it's hard for me to completely relate. But I guess with running compared to other sports, if you aren't at the same skill level, you literally are left behind on your own compared to something like soccer or netball. Like with my work colleagues the other week, we were like kicking this soccer ball. We're doing, what's that thing called? Like where you do knees up and you try and like keep the ball in the air. I don't know what it's called. Hippie uppies? Hippie up? I don't know. Anyway. And like, I'm hopeless, absolutely hopeless. Like my work colleagues will be able to vouch for that, but it didn't matter because I was still in the circle with my friends having a laugh. Like, yes, I wasn't really getting any points for our team or whatever, but like, it didn't matter because I wasn't separated. And like, yeah, maybe I could have been embarrassed or whatever, but compared to running, you literally, if you're not at the same skill level, you can be just so far back. And I think, as you said, that is like that first thing people are concerned about is like, will I get left behind? Will I be on my own? So, and I think it's fair enough to not want to be left on your own, because, you know, what's the point of rocking up to a group if you're not even running with the group, you know, like, and then thinking, oh my God, how embarrassing. And then, you know, they're off at the restaurant, the cafe, and then, you know, you're not even included. Like, I mean, that's just awful. Is there any advice that you've got for people who are already part of a run group to help make it more inclusive for new members to join? Because I see runners typically as very friendly and very inclusive, yet I know that probably we don't seem like it to an outsider or a beginner or whatever. What can we do to make it more inclusive? Like, how can we make new people feel welcome and someone who might be a little bit slower feeling like they're included?
I think there's an awful lot of power in just conversation and connection. So if you do see a newer runner arriving, try and make 2 minutes at the start to just go and chat to them and ask about what they want from the outcome. So for a runner like me, for example, I'm actually quite comfortable being left behind. I don't mind it at all. And if you know that frees you up to get on with the session that you want. But if somebody else is really there because, you know, they've got a personal goal, or they're wanting to make friends, or they're really wanting to get a certain time out of themselves, then that informs you to make sure that you can build the session around that. And something as simple as having an out and back course, so that the runner who's heading out can always see the runners who's coming back. You know, even giving them an opportunity to high five one another as they pass, or alternatively, some sort of lap around an oval where you're all kind of in visual contact, that can really help. And then once you finish, just make sure that you go up and chat again, you know, congratulate them, ask whether they enjoyed it, ask how things could be done differently if that's what needs to happen, and celebrate the successes where it's appropriate. You know, some people don't like the fuss and you've got to be sensitive to that, but others really do like it if you remember that they were there because they were training for the local community 5K and you know, you mention that, or you celebrate the date when it happens. So it's just about conversations, skilled listening and connection. But honestly, as runners, we're actually really good at that stuff.
Yeah, I think we personally love having a chat on a run or before a run. And I know that a lot of runners, that's why they do it, right? Because they want to have a chat anyway, and they just happen to be running at the same time. So I think if we can open those conversations up to people who might feel a little bit more intimidated, or if they're newer, I know any group that I've ever gone to for the first time, as soon as, you know, you might have a minute or two of awkwardness when you're trying to like figure out who everyone is, if you're in the right place, and then someone will say something to you and you instantly just feel like this relief of like, okay, cool. Like I'm here, I'm part of it. They know who I am. They know I'm new, I'm going to be looked after. And it just, you feel so much more comfortable straight away. So I think if we can initiate those conversations early, people just automatically feel a part of it. And then if we can follow that up with, you know, not just having that first conversation and leaving it at that, checking in with how they went afterwards, seeing, you know, making sure they're going to come the next week and just carry on that conversation for there. I think that's really good advice. I'd love to dive in a little bit to, I guess, your own personal mindset, and I guess maybe some thoughts that you pass on to your athletes around your mindset when you're going into a race knowing, and I know that you proudly admit that you are at the back of the pack, and for a race like Bondi to Manly, you were proudly last place, and you own that, and you post about that, and you are so proud, and you should be. And it's an incredible achievement to finish an 80 kilometer race no matter where you are. But how do you go into a race kind of knowing and expecting that you are going to be further towards the back, and knowing you're going to be out there all day, and it's going to take you a little bit longer? I guess, do you have any thoughts around maybe how that race particularly felt for you, or just in general, that sort of mindset?
Yeah, great question. I think for me, and for runners like me, it's the race is almost never about the time on the clock. It's always about time on the feet, the size of the smile, the feeling of progress, and the personal reason that you signed up. So something like Bondi to Manly, for example, I was pretty sure that I was going to finish last. That was never a surprise to me. And in some ways, I was almost kind of proud of it. Like, you know, can't call yourself the slow coast and then, you know, fuck up.
False advertising.
Yeah. And once again, I think it's one of those occasions where maybe being slow is actually an advantage. So runners like me are never surprised when the race is hard. We're not surprised by failure. We generally know that it's going to hurt and that it will scare us. And that part doesn't catch us by surprise ever. And so I do sort of sometimes think that maybe faster runners or runners at the front of the pack could actually learn something from our mindset, which is that we run for reasons that are not time or pace based. And that's that there are other things that are sustaining us on the run. Even arriving at the start line is often a victory in itself. So once again, at the risk of repeating myself, the race represents an opportunity to run because I can. It's an opportunity to celebrate surviving some big shit and to honour the people who I love that are not running that day. It's also an opportunity to create a body that will allow me to keep running for the next 2 or 3 decades, which is a big motivator for me. I run to honor a chapter in my life where I have a healthy body and I want to mark it. And I want to make memories so that one day when I can't run, I can look back on that day and go, you know, look at me, I did that. And in every sense of the word, we do it for the long run. So those are big reasons to, you know, lace up the shoes. And I don't think that your position in the pack or your place on the podium impacts any of that.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's so nice. It's so freeing and kind of exhilarating to, I guess, for someone like myself or someone who's in a similar situation where we have kind of grown up running in a, I don't know, it's also relative, but in a slightly more competitive sense, I guess, and having numbers and metrics and PBs. And, you know, as a kid, I had a book where I'd write my PBs and I'd write my times, and it was how you measured your progress. But I think it can be so nice to let go of that and to get rid of that completely. And as you said, just enjoy it for what it is. Maybe turn the watch off or turn the 1K splits off, so you're not having that beep every time reminding you, and just be able to move your body, see a new place, meet new people. Because they're the things that you remember. Like, you're not going to, when you're 80, you're not going to remember, oh, that was my time. You're going to think, wow, what a cool day when I ran all the way from Bondi to Manly. Like, that's incredible. So I think, yeah, that can be a really nice way for people to just let go of the stress and the numbers and just enjoy it for what it is. So, yeah, I really like that.
Oh, couldn't have said it better.
Well, you did. I just repeated what you said. I'd love to hear a little bit as well. I know that when we were at the level 3 coaching course, I feel like you had a really nice journey just from that first weekend to the second weekend. I feel like there were a few comments that you made early on where you felt maybe out of your depth, where you felt as though you were in company that you weren't used to being in. There were some coaches that are well beyond both of our experience levels and our paces. And I felt similar feelings to what you were mentioning. What do you think about the assumption, excuse me, that a good athlete makes a good coach? And I think I sort of struggled with this when I wanted to become a running coach, because I, you know, never been to the Olympics, never been a national level athlete, never done anything that impressive in terms of a running resume. And it can feel as though there's this assumption that if you're a really good athlete or a really good runner, you'll just make a good coach, because if you can do it, then you can just tell people how to do it. And I struggled with that myself. I'd love to hear, I guess, your thoughts on, around that. And if you struggled with kind of having the confidence to be like, no, I can encourage, I can support, I can write a great program, I can help people get there, whether or not I've done it before myself is kind of irrelevant. I've just got the tools and the knowledge to get someone there. Would you like to let us know about that?
Yeah, as you say, it was a big journey. I did feel very intimidated on that course. But at the same time, certainly by the end of it, I realized that I had a kind of visceral knowledge of running that perhaps some of the other runners in the room didn't have, and that I had a perspective and a wisdom on things that was different to theirs, probably because I see running from behind. I see the running community from the back of the pack. So obviously I have a different set of lenses on things. In terms of whether a good athlete is automatically a good coach, I think that good athletes have a lot to teach all of us. But in my experience, good athletes are also sometimes hampered by their talent, and they don't always know what they don't know. I've encountered a few coaches and a few runners, and I've sought advice from some outstanding athletes, and I've been taught some true gems, most of which I still rely on all the time. But the opposite is also true. Good athletes assume that you see the world in the same way that they do, and they assume that you think the way they do, and they assume that you can do things like they can, often at the pace that they can do it. So, you know, you approach the coach for a half marathon program and you receive something that includes a 4:45 tempo run. And that tells me straight away that he or she just doesn't realize the limits of my physical ability. And also perhaps doesn't appreciate why it is that I signed up. So good athletes don't necessarily make good coaches, but I also think, at least I hope that in my case, that bad athletes can make good coaches. Because as a bad athlete and a low performance coach, I know the struggle and I know the frustration and I know the bias. And I think that I can show you ways to work around those things and to even make them part of your success.
I mean, I think that's wonderful. And I think, I guess it's like a lot of things. And sometimes people are really good at things, but they might not have gotten there because of meticulous planning or great structured programs, or, you know, it might be a lot of talent. And also they've potentially been guided really well by their coach. You know, they probably haven't written their program. And obviously it's very individualized, but I mean, I think I draw similar parallels within my world too. Like, someone who's not had many injuries and is a very good runner and is giving out this injury advice, and I'm listening to it thinking, like, my physio brain's thinking, oh my goodness, no, like, that is terrible advice. Like, do not do that. Like, that is the worst thing. Like, the reason this person isn't injured is just because they're not injured currently. They will be injured at some point because all runners get injured. It's just a part of the running journey. And they've also probably been a little bit lucky and also potentially genetically gifted and have just been able to miss out on blah, blah, blah. So I think just because someone is good at something just is not going to be a reflection on their ability to coach others to get to where they are, because we don't know what their journey is to be where they are, whether it's been a good runner or uninjured or whatever it is. Like, I think it's just far too individualized and far too nuanced to sort of have that rule. Although I imagine it would be potentially hard at times being a coach and not being on the high performance end, because typically coaches are about performance. So yeah, I mean, it's just a really interesting space, isn't it?
It is. And it's also an interesting space when you can't keep up with your own clients. So, you know, they come to me as slow runners, but often have way more ability than I do. And within a couple of weeks are outrunning me. So that's always interesting, but also great. I mean, nice problem to have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Would you mind tell us a little bit about how you goal set with your patients, because, or clients, patients, sorry, my friend, you know what I'm trying to say, because obviously typically goal setting is around performance, and performance, I think most people are thinking like faster times, or like you mentioned before, often it's weight loss or overcoming chronic injury. But how can we sort of shift that mindset, or do you shift that mindset of what performance is to, like, you know, having more energy, feeling motivated, excited for my run, like meeting friends in the run? Like, how do you still use the word performance, or how does that goal setting approach go with your clients?
Yeah, I will often encourage clients to set up a framework for themselves, which I call two goals and a why. So I realized from the outset that this doesn't work for everybody, but it seems to work for most of my clients. And what we do is we will identify two goals from the outset. So whether that is, you know, a first 5K or a first half marathon, or in many cases is even just to run to the corner without stopping. The first goal can be as big or as modest as it needs to be, but to identify a goal and then to be accountable to it. So to write it down, to speak to somebody about it, to share it on social media, maybe even set a fundraising goal around it, whatever. But to have a goal and kind of solidify it a little bit. I find that having a goal is a great motivator, and it's just a great way to measure your progress as you kind of head towards or sometimes slip a little bit away from it. But that goal is a powerful thing. What happens after that, though, is tricky. So a lot of runners are like me. For example, I ran my first 5K, trained really, really hard for it, was so thrilled when I could finally do it, and promptly sat on the couch for 6 months and lost all my progress. And then I had to do it again, and I did it more than once. I did that over and over and over. I would set a goal, I would smash it, I would be so happy, and then I'd stop training. So it took me a long time to realize that more than just having that first goal, I needed to have a second goal. So for a lot of people, that might be a form of progress. You will go from a 2K to a 5K, from a 5 to a 10, from a 10 to a half, and so on. But in the slow coach community, I usually am at pains to say that the second goal doesn't need to be bigger than the first goal. We are not metrics orientated, and we're kind of not really keen on this relentless conversation of, you know, ongoing improvement. It doesn't have to be getting bigger, getting faster, getting bigger, getting stronger, getting faster all the time. So your second goal can often be smaller than your first goal, or it can be different to your first goal. So, you know, run your first 5K and then run your first 5K again, but this time do it while you're smiling, or, you know, have your kids at the finish line, or run in honor of a fundraising goal or whatever. The second goal can be anything. The real purpose of it is to keep you moving once the first goal is achieved, so that you don't lose all the progress. So that's, those are the, this, you know, the first goal and the second goal. That kind of speaks for itself. But I think as runners, as we all know, motivation is very, very temporary, and we can often fall out of love with training very quickly. And having a goal is quite temporary, for want of a better word. So I will often encourage clients to try and find a why, to have a reason for their run. We've already spoken in this conversation about mine. You know, I run because I can. I run on behalf of the people in my life who can't. Other people's whys would look very different to mine. They will have a reason around making their children proud, or losing a bit of weight before their high school reunion, or reaching a fundraising goal. You know, there's lots of, everybody's why is going to be different. But if you can have one, it makes the training a lot easier, because most mornings we lie in bed, we hear the wind or the rain, or, you know, it's very tempting to roll over and go back to sleep. And you think, I don't want to do this run. I really don't want to do this run. I'm too lazy. I'm too tired. I've got too much work. And then you can just kind of say to yourself, okay, what's my why? Why am I doing this? And you run the script. You remember the people who you're running for, or the fundraising goal you want to achieve, or imagine the smile on your kids' faces at the finish line when they see you. And that changes everything. It changes your physicality. It changes your mental outlook. It changes your mindset. And it makes getting up and lacing up the shoes a lot better. So that's my framework, two goals and a why. Yeah, and it works. It works for most people.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah, I just love that so much. I just think the purpose behind what we do is imperative for sustainability and fulfillment. So it's just so wonderful that you, I guess, get all your runners and clients to do that straight away, because you're gifting people this activity that then they can have for life. You know, you've gotten them to pay attention to why it's actually meaningful and important to them. And yes, you can have, like, I guess, I don't know whether it's like a fun goal or something. It's like, yes, like this is this cool thing that sounds awesome, like a 5K. And I feel like often we have goals that we don't even really know much about when we sort of like first do it. Like, you know, when I did my first ultra marathon, it was like, oh my gosh, it sounds crazy. I don't even know what that would actually feel like. So I'm just going to say, I hope my goal is to do this or whatever. So I feel like, you know, and as you said, once you get it, it's like, oh, okay, right. Like, what do I do now? So having that other thing there ready to go, it's like, oh, well, now I'm going to invite my friend to come with me. And my goal is to like do this distance with a friend. And my purpose is because, you know, whatever it is, I think that's so wonderful. And I feel like you're setting people up for success. And I think all running groups and all coaches should encourage their clients to have a stronger purpose, because I just think as humans, that's what we're designed for. I think we need to have reasons why we do things. It can't just be for external validation or for other people. Like, it's got to be about what you want. I guess my question on that, how do you sort of manage when people feel like they're not progressing? Because I guess obviously you've said you don't have to progress, and you've made it very clear that that isn't the purpose. But I imagine there'd still be clients who would feel frustrated by running the same time year after year. And it sounds like you've got experience with that. So I imagine you'd probably share some of your experiences with your clients, but what's your sort of mindset on that? And why is it okay to be the same pace every year? Like, how do you, I guess, navigate that conversation, and internally, what are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, great question. I think For most people, through sheer consistency, they will actually get faster. Not that that's ever our priority, but it's kind of almost inevitable. So with consistency and certainly with strength work, which is built into all our sessions, most runners will get a little bit faster. They'll certainly go longer. They'll gain endurance, they'll gain fitness. But the emphasis that what I would always like to remind them of is that the way that it creates other achievements in their lives. Speaking from personal experience, you know, I went from couch potato to the sort of beetroot faced somebody who could barely run 2Ks to 5Ks to 10 to so on. And now last year completing an 80 kilometer ultra marathon. So it's the power of going left foot, right foot, the power of going forward. Forward is a pace. And as long as you continue, as long as you don't give up, you will get somewhere. You will get somewhere new. And there's always a point in your life where you look back and you go, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. I didn't know that I had that ability. I didn't know that it was in me. I didn't know that the couch potato, Harry Potter loving daytime television renovation TV show run 80 kilometers. I genuinely didn't know that. And if she can run 80 kilometers, what else can she do? And then that takes me into the boardroom, and it takes me into my parenting realm, and it takes me into hard conversations with my boss and my husband and my children. It gives me confidence to show up for things in my community that I would never otherwise have taken on. So all the reasons I run have got nothing to do with running, if that makes any sense at all.
Mm.
It's because it makes my life better. It makes me a better human in every aspect. So if you can't see the progress in your running, have a look at the progress in your life. You will always find it.
That is so nice. That is such a good way to put it. I think, it's life-changing, as you've said. And I think it's a good reminder of what you said as well. Sometimes you don't enjoy running. Sometimes running's hard, but it's, as you said, the other things that improve in your life that make it so worth it, the friendships and all the other things we've discussed tonight. I think that is such a nice reminder. And there's been so many little gems throughout this whole podcast and quotes, and I think you could write a lot of the things that you've said on walls and it would be very inspiring. It's really, really cool. I really appreciate everything you've said so far tonight. If we can finish up just on your personal goals, whether that's your own running. I know we chatted a little bit off air about your next couple of events, but if you want to share that with the listeners, or if you've got any goals with your coaching or anything coming up that you want to chat about.
Yeah, just personally, at the moment, I'm just recovering from UTA 22, which was a couple of days ago. So still catching my breath from that and kind of enjoying the glow from once again doing something I didn't know I could do, making it up Berber steps and not dying. But on the back of that, I've got the Hoka Runway 10K this weekend, which will hopefully just be a cruisy run and celebrating some clients who are taking on their first 10K and seeing their progress, which will be pretty awesome. And then as the year progresses, I would really like to achieve some PBs at the Gold Coast Half Marathon and then later in the year, the Sydney Marathon. So I'm working with a coach myself, so hoping to get some PBs for those. And then looking ahead to next year, I'm quite tempted to maybe have a go at the UTA 50. Ooh. And at the end of next year, I would really like to do my ultimate bucket list, which has always been the New York Marathon.
Oh,
those are my goals. And in terms of coaching, it's really about growing the community, about creating a tribe, I think, around the notion that you can be a slow runner and still be a runner, and how much accomplishment there is to be had in that, and to just getting the best out of clients as they approach their challenges. Some of them aren't interested in races, and that's totally fine. Others are taking on 5Ks or 10Ks, halves and fulls. But it's just making sure that they get there safely, that they run strongly, and that they have all the resources and all the support that they have, that they need to cross the finish line with a smile.
Yeah, awesome. That's so exciting. I hope that all of that goes really well for you and for your athletes as well. Hopefully we will see you out there on Sunday. We're going to be cheering. I can't remember exactly where it is, but not far from the finish line.
Oh, Boy Charlton pool will be at.
Sure.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah. I don't know. Sounds good. Yeah. But yes, we'll look out for you. And yeah, it's going to be exciting. I think that's going to be a good day. And then the races to come and the New York Marathon, I think, would be just an incredible experience. So super exciting. Now, the final question that we always like to finish up on, a bit of a silly one, but your favorite pair of running shoes. Now, this wasn't on the list that I sent you because we like to just throw it out there. Mm-hmm. One pair of running shoes, if you had to get rid of all the others, I assume you've got more than one, what would you have?
It's a bit like choosing a favorite child, isn't it?
Yeah, no one will get upset though.
But I think for me, the shoe that I use as my general all-purpose most of my runs shoe is the Brooks Ghost.
Oh, nice. I think that's the first time we've had that one. But I am a bit of a Brooks fan, so I like that.
Comfortable, neutral, just the right amount of cushioning. Yeah. I love it. I've had three or four pairs. I'm about to replace them again. So yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Very good. All right. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That was incredible. I knew that I was going to enjoy that, but it was, exceeded my expectations. That was fantastic. And I would urge anyone who has kind of felt inspired, or if any of this conversation has sort of sparked their interest in running or getting started with a coach, you can head to runwiththeslowcoach.com or your Instagram. We'll have all of that linked below. You've got some free programs. You've got online programs in person. You've got a free run club on a Thursday night in St. Ives. So lots of different ways that people can reach you and get in contact and start their running journey with you. I would highly, highly recommend